Ron, the sweep following the sweep, or swept following the sweep, was painful, especially with the Brewers losing a couple of games. Good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Mikey, David. Yeah, it's like the roller coaster continues, right? It's kind of the way it's been for the last month and a half or so. And I look back and I think sometimes, I don't say this too often, but sometimes off days come at a bad time. I think this one came at a bad time. We could have used to keep playing, comes around a roll after winning the series against Milwaukee, going out west, sweeping Anaheim, you know, and getting big hits, right. And you know, and then all of a sudden you get an off day going into San Fran, and they kind of lost their mojo a little bit going in offensively, you know, and then it happens. But you know, bad timing, as you said, because Milwaukee lost twice.
I think this is the first time that you end a series and you look at the starting pitching being more bad than good, Ron. It's been so consistent, especially since July 1st, and this first time the Cubs have been swept. And on successive nights, Matthew Boyd, and then Colin Ray, and then to a lesser degree, maybe Shota, they weren't good enough. And I don't know if that's just because the Giants were hot, or this is just a bad spin through the rotation. How did you see it?
I thought, David, Ray got hit around a little bit. Nothing outrageous, but you know, everything they hit found a hole. I thought Matthew actually pitched fine. I didn't see anything. He gave up two runs on, you know, balls that were bloop singles, basically. You know, ball hit off the end of the bat, and then Devers jam shot over the infield. And then I thought the one big swing of the bat that you got to tip your hat because he's hot and he put a great swing on it was Chapman. He hit a high fastball up and away. Wasn't a strike by any means. It was up above the zone, and he hit it out to that deep part of the field in left center field, and that was a three-run homer, and it, you know, two-run homer. And, you know, that was a big, big swing of the bat. And I actually thought Boyd pitched good, and Shota was great yesterday. And nothing you can say when the both starting pitchers, and you knew this was going to be the case. The game went, I think it was 2 hours and 13 minutes, ball game. Both guys got on the mound. They threw strikes. They gave up, you know, a few hits here and there, but they were attacking the hitters. And, you know, the Cubs came up short late in the ball game. I thought both guys pitched great yesterday in that ball game. So I thought the Cubs got stung by a little bit of bad luck against Boyd, but that's baseball. That's just the way it is.
What's going on with Daniel Palencia? Because that was tough to see him give up a series of singles, and he also throws the ball like a billion miles an hour. Why is he throwing off speed pitches?
It's a good question. I think that, you know, whenever he gives up a hit on a breaking ball, it's like one of those things where you go, oh, why do you think it's like he's giving the hitter a chance? You know, I agree with you. I understand it because there are times where he makes a great pitch with his hook, with that little slider, and it's, you know, he hit or misses it by feet, not by inches. And, you know, he's blowing his heater at 100 miles an hour. So, nothing's wrong with Daniel. He, you know, I was, as that game was going in that inning, I was like, they got the base hit, and I thought, or the double, and I thought, oh, boy. And then Lee came to the plate, and he's a total contact guy. And I just thought, oh, this probably not the best matchup in the world because he's not going to overswing. He's not looking to hit a home run. And he just got on top of the ball and just hit a little line drive to the infield, and that was the ball game. So I don't think anything's wrong with Daniel. I think he's just fine. Yeah, you know, you got to remember now, he's only been a closer for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
3 months, so he's really, you know, he was a closer, though, a very good one in Iowa.
Yeah.
So he's done this before. It's just one of those things where I think, you know,
I don't know, Coom.
Learning on the job here in the big leagues now.
It's a tough place to learn on the job, especially in a pennant race with September 2 days away. And the 27 batters he's faced over the last 2 weeks, 12 of them have reached base. I'm a little nervous about Daniel Palencia heading into September.
Well, I think every closer goes through that, David. I really don't. Listen, at the end of the day, he has done a very good job. If you look at his numbers, he's lost two saves all year. Mm-hmm. I think he's 18 out of 20 or 19 out of 21, if I remember correctly. His ERA is under two. If you know, might be right at two now after yesterday's ball game. He's going to give up some hits sometimes. He's going to blow some games. It's the way it is. It's just unfortunate it was now. But if you look at his numbers, you got to go, well, he's the guy. He's done the job. He really has.
Rod Coomer on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of Early Pay. More at huntington.com/yourmoney. So Coom, they manage 8 runs in the 3 games in San Francisco. And then last night, you see Kyle Schwarber hit 4 home runs. He went 4 of 6, and he set a Phillies record with 9 RBI in a 19-4 victory. So he single-handedly beat the run total from the whole weekend. Listen, Schwarber's long gone. But I noticed Cody Bellinger hit a 2-run homer against the Sox. He's not that long gone.
Mully wants to remind us of the 2 worst decisions the Cubs have made over the last 5 years.
Oh, I need another coffee. For
Something stronger, Coom.
It's too early for that, David. I don't know if I can do that, but it's not. We're not tailgating football games.
It just...
Mike, keep going.
No, I'm just saying... It's this idea of the run production not being there again. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to be negative, but that did happen. These are all facts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think the Kyle Schwarber thing, we were hearing about that on the team plane as we were heading out of town last night. And I'm happy for Kyle. He's just one of those people, man, that he's special. He just is. And I don't mean with a bat in his hand. He's just a special guy. He's a great dude. He fits Philadelphia. It's like he fits Chicago. You know, he was a kid that came to Chicago as a young guy and fit in, you know, and he took accountability when he made mistakes. And he was a guy. I'll just say this. I always thought, and I've said this on your show many times, you know, years ago, I thought he was the best hitting prospect we had of all the young guys that we had from the Rizzo group and Bryant and Javi and all them. I thought he was by far the best hitting prospect. And then he became victim of the system of Major League Baseball and what they wanted. They turned a line drive power guy that's extremely strong into a guy that sprays the ball around the field with power to a pull lift guy, and then got upset that the results of that went the wrong way, and he started striking out at an alarming number. And I'm like, well, that's what the systems did. And they were I remember having, well, tell me, well, the strikeout doesn't matter until it mattered. And I'm like, well, this is what you taught him. He was a young kid. He came to the big leagues, and you got him pulling and lifting, and I thought, that's just not going to work. And we're finding out now that, you know, it's starting to come back to, you know, some normalcy of spraying the ball around the field and getting on top of the ball. And I'm like, well, okay. you knew this was coming. I mean, it's, you know, some of us that have hit for a living for a long time, you're like, yeah, that theory's not going to work. And the averages go down. And he's a guy that got to somebody. Someone got to him in Philly and got him back on top of the ball enough to where he's hitting 250, 260 now. Mm. And that 250 or 260, he's only got 120 RBIs now. And I know RBIs don't count, but they sure do if you got a guy.
They count, Coom. I heard you tell us the other day, runs scored and runs batted in still are categories that matter to you.
They do to me. You know, when you play on teams with guys that have an ability to score runs, or you play on a team that has a guy that has the ability to knock in runs, everybody in the lineup, depending on your slot in the lineup, has more or less opportunity to drive in so many runs. But the ability to do that and have quality at bats with runners in scoring position and driving in runs is a skill. And it just is. And some guys do it well, some guys don't. There's a guy in Philly right now doing it really well.
So, Coombe, help me understand what the plan would be if you were making the decisions in the outfield. Because the way I look at it, Kyle Tucker's getting a little bit back to the way that we're used to seeing him hit and get on base. But Happ and Suzuki take turns, it seems, struggling. PCA certainly is a guy that you want in there because of his defense, and certainly he's not been as bad as maybe in his slump as some of the others. And Owen Casey, I think, needs some at-bats regular, or else you're going to see him not make the impact that you hope. You got those guys. How would you approach that in terms of the final month of the season?
Well, I think you're gonna live and die with the guys that live or die with the guys that have got you here so far. You just are. I think Owen Casey getting a lot of at bats right now. We saw yesterday where two seam guy, basically fastball slider guy, change up to lefty. So I should say that to Owen. He punched out on the change yesterday, but you know, thinking he's going to be the answer, as young as he is and inexperienced as he is, and thinking you're going to give him, you know, starts 5 days out of the week, that's just not going to be, that's not going to be something that the Cubs are going to want to do. The biggest key, you got to figure out a way to get Suzuki back on track. Suzuki right now in as bad a slump as Tuck was in. You know, he's really scuffling, and the same thing with Ian. He's scuffling too. So, you know, not to the same extent, but still. And at the end of the day, you got to figure out how to get those guys back on track if you're going to play and stay in baseball deep in October for sure. I don't see where you do anything different other than, you know, play the guys that got you there. I really don't.
I think the Rockies are 38-96 now. And you would think that this might be a good spot to get healthy, to get the offense healthy. Who knows? I mean, I don't know how to predict games. I'm just wondering, what do you concentrate on in this series before you, as you close out August and you come home for September 1st, is it Atlanta? What do you concentrate on with what is it that you got to get done in these three games?
Well, at the end of the day right now, I think you just got to do whatever you can do to score runs, you know, and have good at bats and work with the guys that are scuffling. And I know, you know, whatever it is you're going to have to do to try to get those guys back in a good frame of mind, you're going to have to do it. And if this is the series where you sit Suzuki and you let him get, you know, 2 or 3 days of just, you know, watching some baseball and getting him back on track, you know, and hoping that works to just free him up mentally. Same thing with Ian. Maybe you do something like that. I don't see Ian's swing being, you know, where it's breaking down so much. But you do see that a little bit with Suzuki. You know, say at times gets a little, I don't want to say tentative, but he takes a lot of pitches. And when he's going good, he's much more aggressive swinging the bat. So, you know, that's one thing that I feel like he could do a much better job of, you know, without changing mechanics or anything like that. The aggressiveness as a hitter, I just feel like it's something that both of those guys could probably try to do a little more and see if that can work for them. Right now, though, you've got to get back on track. You've got to get a good feeling with those two guys in the lineup. You know, and if you do, this team rolls. They really do. If it doesn't, you know, that's where you're seeing, you know, this big gap in run scored.
Coombe, I wonder if on the flight to Denver, if Zach filled you in on how big of a trade that the Micah Parsons deal was and what it meant for the Bears. You have any opinions on it?
He was sitting next to me, and he could hardly sit in his chair. He's bouncing around across the aisle with Pat, and I know Pat didn't care. So I was like, what's going on in between the Schwarber thing and the trade to Green Bay?
Zach was bubbling with information.
Tough night. Tough night for the Chicago sports fan.
Yeah, help.
Yeah, to get the premier rusher in football against the solid Green Bay. I'm just hoping the Bears have a good year. I really am.
You're the best, yeah. Ron. Thank you, buddy.
Enjoy
we
Denver.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, will do. You guys have a great weekend.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Marshall is feeling really good about the Cubs.
It's not that I'm feeling good about the Cubs. It's that all of you should be feeling good about the Cubs. The Cubs are ready to make a run. The Cubs are 5 games back from the best record in baseball, which just happens to belong to the Milwaukee Brewers in their division. They're going to catch the Brewers. And the journey has begun. We are talking about it here on Raheem and Harris, Russell Dorsey in for Layla. Broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we got to talk about how the Cubs got here. They are the hottest team in baseball. Yes, you heard me right. They have won 6 of their last 7, 8 of their last 10. No other team in baseball has 8 wins in their last 10 games. They're the hottest team in baseball, Russ.
Yeah.
And they're set to keep it up because of who's on the schedule, with the Giants for 3, with the Rockies for 3, although you just warned us about taking anything for granted. And I'm looking at that Wednesday matchup at Oracle Park, a little, not scared, but a little concerned, because Colin Ray is going up against Carson Wisenhunt. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who's Carson Wisenhunt? And you answered that question in the break by saying Carson Wisenhunt is who?
It's one of the Giants' top prospects.
And which arm does he throw with?
The left one.
That's been a problem for the Cubs throughout this
season. A
little
bit.
So you can understand that and the juxtaposition of Colin Ray, who is somehow, some way, a 10-5 pitcher who, just when I think he's been overexposed, finds a way to keep the Cubs in the game and help them get a win.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, there was a while there where I think it was before the All-Star break, when we were talking about the rotation and, oh, what could the Cubs add? And we're talking about what they had on their staff already. And Colin Ray was brought up. And we both looked at each other like, do you want to overexpose Colin Ray? But to his credit, he's come out there. He's pitched well in whatever role that they've asked him to pitch in. And they've been very successful in when he's taking the ball. So I'm still a believer in you don't want to overexpose him. But I do think that's a valuable piece to have when you're talking about a guy that can pitch in bulk, can take a start for you when you need, especially in the postseason, what we've seen the postseason become, where it's like, all right, maybe the matchup, we start pitcher X, give him 3 or 4, and then have Colin Ray be our bulk guy for 2 or 3 innings, whatever you feel is necessary. And I know teams view it in outs. So I was going to say, if you say, let's have Colin Ray get us 12 to 15 outs, then you feel really good about where you are getting into the back end of your bullpen.
Craig Counsell, real big on out-getters. That's
See?
The thing he loves to use. And I completely agree with him, because of the way that baseball has changed and the fact that last postseason, 52% of the innings were pitched by relievers, not starters. That's more than half. First time that's ever happened in Major League Baseball history. So that's a matchup to keep your eye on. Wisenhunt, Ray, tomorrow. Tonight, it's Verlander against the father who stepped up, Matthew Boyd. The Cubs take on the Giants in San Francisco. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:10. You're going to have to stay up till 8:45 for first pitch on the Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Okay, Kyle Tucker's hitting again. 5 for 12, 3 home runs, 7 RBI in the series sweep against the Angels. Mm-hmm. He is out of his funk. Yesterday on the show, Russell, we declared he is officially back. Other guys, I don't know if they're back yet. Seiya Suzuki doesn't seem to be back yet.
No.
PCA doesn't seem to be back yet. And you wanted to put a bit of a microscope or magnifying glass, whatever, binoculars, however you see things closer, on the fact that Kyle Tucker's been getting a lot of heat in this town.
Lots of heat.
But other guys have been kind of escaping said fire.
Yeah.
Who are you speaking of specifically?
You set it up like a shot. I don't like that. So you're right. I think Kyle Tucker, and rightfully so, has taken a lot of heat, right? He had been ice cold. He had not looked like himself. And when you're the big dog, that's what comes with that. That's what comes with being the big dog. When you get all the praise for carrying teams for weeks at a time, that comes with it when you don't perform. I also understand that I think people hold Kyle Tucker in a different regard because, one, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. Two, he's expected to make a boatload of money. Three, they traded for said Kyle Tucker, and you trade up a guy in Cam Smith who's going to be in Houston for the next 6 years, and then also Hayden Wesneski. Now, Hayden
Wesneski. And Isaac Paredes.
Right, and Isaac Paredes. Two of those guys out for the year. Cam Smith has performed at times, but also there have been times where he has not performed. So sometimes I don't want people to look at it through that lens because there is no perfect thing where you could say, hey, this is, we traded this guy and then Cam Smith is going to be here and an all-star. You don't know that. Like, you don't know what you don't know.
No, I agree with that completely.
We had never seen Cam Smith in the big leagues before. You don't know what that guy, player X, is going to become. But for all the heat that Kyle Tucker has taken, I don't feel like in this city that Pete Crow Armstrong has gotten the same, what's the word?
Not even smoke.
Smoke, no. And has been worse. PCA in the month of August, slash line 156, 212, 234. One homer, the homer he hit in LA. Big homer.
Big homer, though.
Big homer, but that was the only, this is the first homer he had hit in the month of August. Three walks with a 29% strikeout rate.
That seems high.
The highest strikeout rate in baseball is 31%. So he's near the top just this month in strikeout rate. And I think PCA has the benefit of young guy, made the crazy splash, the breakout player in Major League Baseball because of what he does defensively. He's exciting. I think he gets some protection because of that. And that's not a knock against PCA. But also, the numbers are worse than Tucker and worse than Seiya Suzuki. Now, as a collective, all those guys have to be better. For the Cubs to get where they want to go, PCA, Seiya Suzuki, Kyle Tucker have to hit.
And you could argue Ian Happ as well. The entire outfield, all four of them.
They have to hit. Because that was the strength that you made all your decisions at the deadline on, right? We're not going to make a ton of starting rotation moves because we're the best offensive baseball and we're going to hit. And then what happened? They didn't hit. On the contrary, the pitching has been fantastic.
Otherworldly.
I did not expect that. You did not expect that. Cubs fans did not expect that. And so if the starting pitching, who you've asked all season, hey, got to step it up. Guys have stepped it up. Imanaga and Boyd have been fantastic. Cade Horton is pitching his way into NL Rookie of the Year. Jameson Taillon, if he's going to pitch the way he pitched against the Milwaukee Brewers last week, you have good problems when you're talking about who's going to start for you in the postseason. But if those guys have to squeeze the ball tighter because it's like, we're only going to get one run tonight, we're only going to get two runs tonight, that's not a good place to be in.
It's not a good place to be, but when you talk about the postseason, Russ, let's be honest. That's what separates the teams that advance in the postseason from the ones who not, is that you get the clutch pitching. You get a guy on the mound who could throw zeros, or maybe a one, but zeros. And offensively, you're going to be facing the best pitching you've seen all season long. Mm-hmm. And so the margin for error for all these teams in the postseason, I'm not just talking about the Cubs. I'm talking about whether you're the Cubs or a hard, fast-charging Reds team, or the Tigers, or a Red Sox team that gets hot, it all goes to nothing if you can't be hit clutch with your hitting and also throw up a whole bunch of zeros in the postseason. I don't see a lot of postseason games 11-8. I see a lot of 4-2, 3-1, 2-1. Whew.
And you know, with that, if I'm winning a 4-3 game, you know what I need to do? I need to be able to get on base. A 212 on base percentage for PCA, that ain't going to cut it. Tucker, 278, and he's a guy that historically has gotten on base at a higher clip. That's not going to cut it. Seiya Suzuki, a 344 on base, you'll take that. But there is no slug there, and the average is not there at all. You can't, when you are a team that is built to just slug when you're not slugging, but you're also not getting on base, you do not score runs. And I think people have seen, okay, this is a team that maybe got power happy. They're hitting the ball at the ballpark. People are saying, oh, PCA is going to be a 40-40 guy. And then you have the power outage. And when you have the power outage and you don't get on base, it makes the lows feel very low, like we've seen.
This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Talking with Russell Dorsey about the Cubs as they are hard charging towards first place in the NL Central. Yeah, you heard me right. They were down 9 games at the start of last week. By the end of the week, they had cut 4 games off the division lead and are only 4 games back now of having one of the best records in baseball, 5.5 back of that top record in baseball when you talk about the Brewers. I am resigned that the Cubs are going to catch the Brewers. Russell, yes or no, are you with me?
I want to be with you. I've thought about it all morning since we talked about it originally. I think they get to a game back. But I think that's the closest they get. I don't think they win the division. But I think they get to a game.
Forget about winning the division. Yeah. Do you think at any point they will tie them in the standings?
No.
Okay.
No.
But a game back?
A game
back. That's you. Why a game back? Why not they get close? But you made it very specific with that game.
Because the Brewers, to me, they just haven't been that team that will go on the stretch for you to get that close to them, right? Because now you're at a point in the schedule where 5.5 games back going into September, that's a good chunk of games. And so now you're in a point where you have to win as the Cubs and they have to lose. How many nights, and we'll just say in September, are you going to say the Brewers lose and you win? Because there might be some nights where the Brewers win and you lose, and now you're trying to play the catch-up game.
No, I think they'll win enough to catch them. I just think they'll win enough to catch
them. What makes you believe that?
Because they've got the Giants and the Rockies, and they're going to win 4 or 5 or maybe even 6 of the next games, and they're going to be 2 to 3 games out, if maybe 1 to 2 games out by
the
end of next
week. There's an assumption in your point there. You're assuming that
the Brewers are going to lose games?
Yes.
The Brewers are not. So I think the Brewers are going to go 500 at best against the Blue Jays and the Phillies, who they have back-to-back series against. That means they could take 2 or 3 from one of them and lose 2 or 3. Those are two things that very well I expect to happen. Like, it could happen. It's not. That's well within the realm of possibility. Would you agree with that? Split with the
Sure. I think the Blue Jays are as good as anybody in the American League.
Exactly. So
I think the Phillies are a World Series contender. So yeah, I think that's fair.
That's where the end of next week is where most of this ground is going to be made up. And then we're talking about a team that's 2 to 3 games out. And once you're talking about a team that's 2 to 3 games out, now yes, what you said about September is true, but you don't need it to happen nearly as much as you do when they're 5.5 or 5 games back.
You can't have slip ups at this point in the season. The Braves come in here. And then the Nats coming here.
6 games against the Braves, you better win 5 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it.
That team still has Ronald Acuña Jr. I'm just giving you out.
Jerks and Profarc is a problem.
Right.
They have guys. I'm aware of that. I just saw the White Sox just played them and couldn't get it done, even though they were scoring all the runs.
A lot of runs.
So the Cubs are scoring all the runs.
Sox, by the way, they can bang a little bit.
A little bit.
I don't know if people have been paying attention.
A little bit.
They like to swing it.
15 runs the last 2 games, big in-division wins, one against a team you're saying, well, that's not really a major league roster. The 8-0 win against the Twins. But they come back against the Royals, and they're like, oh, y'all want to go to the playoffs? Watch this. I love that.
It's playing spoiler.
I love playing spoiler.
I think that's big for a young team.
But back to the PCA talk, because a lot of texters weighing in here.
And we appreciate that.
And you can, obviously, anytime you want, let us know what you think on the text line. 312-644-6767. The reason PCA, this is from 630,
mm-hmm.
The reason PCA doesn't get as much flack is that he's a second-year player on a cheap team-controlled deal, and his defense and base running is elite. If you think PCA...
The base running is elite?
Well, he's had some base running issues.
Okay.
If you think PCA is a blanket 30-homer player, you have really dumb expectations. It's not just his profile. He has outperformed this season, so regression should be expected, and just be happy with what you've gotten so far. That's one of the... There's many, many of these.
All right, I want to respond to that one first. You can't be happy with what you've gotten so far when what I've gotten lately, which is most important, is 156, 212, 234. Because if I'm trying to catch the Milwaukee Brewers, as you point out, Marshall Harris, I need better than that from the guy I have hitting the cleanup spot. I need better than 186, 278, 329 from Tucker, 208, 344, 278 from Suzuki. Like, I don't want to pin it on one guy. We were talking about PCA specifically, so I got specific there. But I agree with many of the texters that say it's them as a collective, right? It can't just be Michael Bush doing his thing and then nobody behind him doing anything else. That goes down to Ian Happ and the guys in the middle of that lineup as well. They have to hit as a collective. And so for 3 months of this year, they hit as a collective. And that's why you're the best offense in baseball. But they hadn't hit like a collective in a while.
Reverting to the mean, that is how it will happen. Other than PCA, the veterans usually revert to the mean. That's from 630. Better question, because you said something that I don't necessarily agree with. You're talking about built to slug. I think the Cubs are built to score more than just by hitting the ball over the fence or hitting doubles into the gap. I think they still are. Here's why. I've been wrestling with this and protesting this all season long. Why is Matt Shaw still batting ninth? I don't think he should bat ninth. He should bat higher, because a whole lot of guys aren't doing anything and Matt Shaw is doing things. Here's one of the reasons why I believe Matt Shaw is still batting ninth. Not just to keep him in a place where he's comfortable, but he has literally proven that he is the second fastest guy on this team. He is a second leadoff man, if you will, or really the leadoff man. When you put Michael Bush leading off in the order, because he doesn't have speed, and Shaw gets on, he could steal a bag. He can take extra bases. And I think with him in an ideal lineup, Nico Hoerner or Ian Happ batting leadoff, you're creating situations where guys can make things happen on the base paths.
Okay, I don't disagree with your point, because he has played so well in the second half. But when you start doing the let's move guys around, you can't move everybody.
No, I'm okay with him staying ninth now, because I'm like, at least when they're not slugging.
Would you have moved Tucker down by now? Would you have moved PCA down by now?
I would have moved Tucker down a few weeks ago, just down in the lineup.
Would you move PCA today?
PCA, you can bat him sixth. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I'm okay with that, because he doesn't get on base at a high clip. I was always
And I
on
think
the,
that's my big thing there.
I was always on the train of, stop talking about PCA batting leadoff. It's dumb. It's a dumb idea.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea.
It's a dumb idea.
It's not a good idea.
PCA should never bat leadoff. I know what his batter profile is. I know what he likes to chase. You need guy who, number one, yes, he has the speed to bat leadoff, but he's got to be able to get on base.
A sub 300 on base guy should never lead off for a baseball
team. This is just basic math. And so I just look at it like this. Craig Counsell is getting paid a lot of money to do what he does. They are in position to go to the playoffs. They may be in position by the end of next week to challenge for the division title. I can't be mad at all the ebbs and flows of 162 games without acknowledging the greater good.
Yeah.
And right now, the Cubs, more good than bad.
Craig, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Your baseball team's 7-3 in the last 10. You've made a little bit of ground in the division and obviously leading the wild card chase. What was the emotion of last week like? And I don't mean like the Craig Counsell Wisconsin stuff. I mean the Cubs and the Brewers and what last week was like.
Well, I think the reality of it is that they're a really good baseball team. They're the best team in the big leagues right now, record wise. And I think, you know, going up against that team, that means that you're going to have a major challenge. And so I think it was fun to watch our guys, you know, rise up to that challenge and take on that challenge and succeed in that challenge. So that was probably the biggest thing. It was good baseball. You know, it was the first day they beat us pretty good and it wasn't a great game. The last 4 days were really good baseball.
Craig, something that I always know you talk about is you should want to play in high-stakes games, great atmospheres down the stretch. For you as a manager, has it changed for you maybe those first couple of years to now in what managing those games going into October, knowing that the playoffs are on the line, than maybe you felt years later and right now?
No, you know, not a lot. I mean, I think, you know, this is, you know, a fun time of year. It's when, you know, emotions get turned up. There's no question about it. And that makes it more fun. Sometimes it makes it, you know, a little tougher on the loss for, you know, the hour or so after the game. But it's when you're in it, it's why you want to be in it, to feel it and to be a part of the fun stuff and the hard stuff. And I've told our guys that a number of times. It's like, you're going to feel the good stuff and you're going to feel the bad stuff just more this time of year. And don't like run away from it. Just feel it and then, you know, move on. Because that's what we love to do. And we're lucky to be here.
On this road trip, Kyle Tucker has been a menace at the plate. He has been back to doing what he has done for most of the year. Inside of that struggle with Kyle Tucker, what were the things that you felt it was important for him to know? And what things as a manager did you feel like you needed to know to either keep putting him in the lineup or sitting him down?
Oh man, I don't know if I have a great answer to that one. I mean, you know, that this is when you use your experience and you use your, you know, your, this is a gut feel thing. You're kind of taking your experience from watching players and for 30 years in the game, and you're making calls based on that and what you see. There's no, you know, there, obviously he was, the numbers were not great, and he was struggling, and you try to worry. I think most importantly, you think about the person. You stop kind of thinking about the baseball player, and you just think about the person, and I think those are when you get those decisions right.
Results are not always the truth of what's happening, so I always tend to ask people involved, like, the numbers for Kyle in these games against the Angels and have been good. Has the process been good? How would you describe the at-bats?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to complain about process when the ball goes 380 feet into the stand.
Facts.
I'd be making something up to complain about stuff if that was the case. But no, I think as a hitter, you want to square up the baseball. And you know, Kyle sometimes keeps it really simple for you guys, and we don't like that, how simple he keeps it. But that's what his job is to do, is to square up the baseball. What was he not doing during his slump? Squaring up the baseball. When he hits a home run, he squares up the baseball. So that's, you know, he's doing what he wants to do.
Craig,
too simple?
No. I think baseball, something you boil it down, throw the ball, hit the ball, catch the ball.
No,
I get it.
It's supposed to be simple, but there are so many times, like in sports in general, where you go, oh, well, that result was great, but was the process sustainable? That's why I like to ask. Like, I just like to know.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I think in the hitting place, you know, I think when you're going through slumps, you're kind of, it's a little bit of trial by error, you know, and I think you kind of end up going pitch to pitch and at bat by at bat, maybe trying some things. In the end, what you need to, you know, confirm an adjustment you've made is a ball squared up. That's what you need, right? And you know, Kyle got some of those this weekend, and it's, you know, it just helps you, man. It helps you mentally as much as physically.
Craig, your starting staff was kind of under the microscope, especially going into the trade deadline, and they've been able to, you know, be one of the best groups, if not the best group in baseball. And a big part of that has been Cade Horton, who has a sub-1 ERA in the second half. I know the fastball was something that he kind of struggled with early on when he first got called up, and it's been really good as of late. Is there anything that you've seen in his starts specifically with the fastball that has made that pitch come to life recently?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think his fastball is like, it's really unique, I think. And I think he's got some more, room for growth with it. But, you know, what's so unique about it is that we call it like a cut fastball, which means it goes away to a right-hander and into a left-hander. And he doesn't always have complete control over how much or how little it's going to cut. It's just kind of how the ball comes off his fingers, like pitch to pitch. And Justin Steele has a little bit of this going on too. But the ball's just moving, at 96 miles an hour, and the hitter just can't, especially the left-handed hitter, really has a hard time of getting the barrel to that pitch. And so he's able to just attack so aggressively in the zone. And as long as, middle pitches still get hit, but as long as you kind of just stay out of the middle, the fastball just plays so well anywhere in the strike zone.
I know, because he's been so locked in, you almost don't want to mess with him. But when obviously he only pitched 34 innings last year, and I know that's something you guys have been mindful of with limited off days. In the last month of the season, I think you guys have 3 off days. Is there any maneuvering to try to get him any more rest, knowing that you have, big goals in mind for the postseason, or do you just let his body kind of tell you guys what you need to do as far as rest is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, we've been on about 6 starts into definitely limiting his pitches every start, making a big effort to limit his pitches. So he's only got the 80 pitches, I think, once, and that was really because of a 10-pitch at bat. That's probably number one. When we have days to back him up, we'll take advantage of it. But I think, lowering the pitch count, I think, is right now proving to be successful in terms of how he feels and how he's recovering. And we're using that as our guide right now. May we change something kind of the next month? Yeah, we're kind of it's start to start, and we're considering everything. But he's, all signs point to his recovery going as well as it possibly could. So just not concerned. And that's a credit to Cade's kind of athleticism and his preparation. But it's something that obviously we monitor for sure and monitor on a daily basis.
Well, the fun thing about having Craig on, and we're talking with Cubs manager Craig Counsell, and Russ Dorsey is in for Speaks. Craig knows how sports radio works, so sometimes he'd be like, hey, I'm going to do the sports radio thing, and this is I'm not going to do the sports radio thing. I'm going to do a sports radio thing right now. I'm going to reverse a sports radio thing real quick. Because the sports radio thing is, when things go bad, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach, right? I'm going to do the reverse sports radio thing. Things have gone so well for the Cubs pitching infrastructure, and with individuals that the Cubs have brought in, I was wondering, legitimately this morning, I was wondering, does Tommy Hotovy want to be a manager?
I that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. I have not asked him that specific question. I'll ask him for you and report back.
Okay, I look forward to that. I also would love to follow up on that question on something that maybe you can answer. I know I kind of put you on the spot with that. If there is someone on your staff that's like, I want to grow and be you or be better than you, what are the things that you try to help them do to get to that point? Like if someone says that they want
to take the opposite.
Do the opposite of what I do?
Yeah,
but you're the highest paid manager in the game. You want to follow that path right there.
Looks can be deceiving. You know what I mean? You got to always stay ahead of it. You got to stay ahead of it.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer by Craig.
All right. I tried. I just wanted to do the reverse sports radio thing.
Craig, one thing
I'll ask Tommy. I think Tommy, I absolutely think Tommy's capable of it. I think he's the great thing about Tommy is that he's the best thing is that he's just an insanely hard worker. Two things: he's an insanely hard worker, and he really cares deeply about his players and the Chicago Cubs. You put those things together, and you're going to have a person that's very successful at their job. And Tommy's been very successful, and he's really kind of built his resume, so to speak, kind of the right way in terms of working his way from a lot of jobs that taught him a lot about people, a lot about the organization, And he's certainly put in a long stretch of just time with the Cubs, and I think he's got a really good sense of the organization, how it works, and the history of it, and that's been very helpful to me for sure.
Lawrence, you're going to get a nice edible arrangement from Tommy Harvey here. I think that's a good thing to put into the ethos.
Well, look, as Craig was talking, I just thought about it, and I figured out how to sports radio this even more. Okay, so now what we'll do is Tanny will clip that conversation, and then the morning show, when they have Tommy Harvey on, they'll ask him if he's ever thought about being a manager, and then I'll get the response and play it before Craig's back on the show. So it's a win-win-win-win-win for us here on this show.
There we go.
See? Now I instead of having a conversation with Tommy, I'm now going to warn him.
Like, hey, man. So I went home with Lawrence Holmes and Russ Dorsey, and they wanted to hire you as a manager.
Holmes is out there starting mess, Tommy. Don't fall for it. That's what he's going to say. It's all good.
All good. All good.
Craig, there's something that's interesting I saw watching the game last night. You're the only active manager that had a homer off of Justin Verlander. Now, one, does that surprise you? And two, when you see a Justin Verlander or a Max Scherzer and those guys are still getting it done at a high level, does that surprise you in this day and age of baseball?
Well, look, I mean, Verlander's, I think, 41. And if you're playing in the big leagues at 41, you're a great player. I mean, it means you've done great things. It means you've been able to sustain, you know, a level of performance at an age when very, very few are. So there's just respect for that, I think, more than anything. And you know, it's a Hall of Fame career, right? And so there's just respect for that, no matter what. No matter what happens in the game, there's absolute respect for that.
It's cool to have some of those tentacles of the game. It's funny because I feel like that's one of those great things about baseball, is that there's so much history to it, Craig, that if you start looking, it's in every game note package. And MLB teams do a great job of being like, hey, this guy played for this guy, and this guy was teammates with this guy. Have you ever, inside of the game, like, really had, and you had Pat Murphy with you for forever, and you guys are connected going way back. But have you ever, like, looked across the diamond, like the what is it, for the love of the game, where you're like, man, I'm so happy that that guy, I remember when that guy was struggling, or I remember when that guy came up, and I'm so happy that they've turned into the player that they've turned into, or the coach or the manager that they've turned into.
Yeah, I mean, look, Drew Pomerantz. I mean, their simple story this year, which has been fun for me, is Drew Pomerantz. Drew Pomerantz pitched for me in Milwaukee in 2019, had a great season. Signed a really nice contract with the Padres, pitched maybe 20 innings, and has been hurt for the last better part of the last 5 years, and has been in the minor leagues for the better part of the last two or three, and now is having major league success again at, you know, age 35. That makes you feel good, man. He's been, the lot hasn't gone right for the last 5 years, and he's gotten back and having a great season, and that's really fun to watch. Really fun to watch, no doubt about it.
Craig, I know,
but I mean, back to Verlander. It's funny what I think about the cool thing is that, you know, Matt Shaw's 23 years old. I'm 55 years old. We've both faced Justin Verlander in a major league game.
Wow,
you know, we're 30 years apart. 30 years apart in age, 32 years apart in age, and we both faced Justin Verlander in a major league game. Like, that's kind of crazy to think about like that.
That's some cool historic
stuff. Speaking of baseball history, Craig, one of your longtime friends, Bob Uecker, was honored in Milwaukee over the weekend, and I know you probably got to see a lot of that. And I know Adam McKelvey put on Twitter that they've dedicated the press box to him up in Milwaukee. For people that didn't get to know Bob Uecker as well as you have, I've met him a couple of times before he passed, and was always really kind. What should people know about who Bob Uecker was?
Well, I think, you know, Bob was just had a fascinating life. And he became like a celebrity. He was a TV star, but then he came back to baseball, and he, because he loved the daily, I think he taught you how to love the daily routine of baseball. It's one of the things that I always admired about him so much. You know, this is a, you know, into his, throughout his whole 80s, he came to the park every day to go to work and did the routine that a Major League Baseball season kind of requires you to do. And the great part and the difficult part about being a baseball fan or working in baseball is just the daily routine. It's a lot, right? It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of games. But it's also the great part about it. And I think Bob kind of always taught me like to just love and enjoy that part of it, the routine of it, the daily routine of it, and getting to interact with, your friends and your coworkers and, you know, your opponents even. And Bob was great at that. And he thoroughly enjoyed it. He loved it. And he found out a way to make it fun for every interaction you had with him.
Craig, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Good luck tonight and the rest of the road trip.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.